Welcome back, fight fans, and welcome to this week's episode of the Ultra MMA podcast. Once more, we were absent last week due to the ongoing coronavirus pandemic and a busy schedule. However, we are back, and we are back for good, as we now have four cracking weeks to settle ourselves down and produce some top quality podcasts. I'm your host, Jake Jones. My co-host this week is a guy who needs no introduction. It's my partner in crime, the one and only Sean Gilley. Yes. How's things been, mate?
He's back.
And he's back for good. It's mate, it's good to hear from you. How's everything up in Newcastle?
Oh, it's like quarantine zone. It's like, have you ever seen the Simpsons movie where they put the dome over the city?
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
what it's like.
Yeah, well, funnily enough, I'm in Leeds at the moment, mate. So it's pretty bad up here, but it seems a little bit better than... I know Newcastle seems one of the bad zones for it. So. Either way, let's get into this. So to kick everything off, before we do our three fights of last weekend recap, we have to shine on the main event and the co-main event of UFC 254. Whittaker versus Cannonier and Khabib versus Gaethje. I mean, mate, what did you think of this?
I was gobsmacked. Even Whittaker looked amazing against Cannonier.
He really did, didn't he?
He really dominated, man.
Well, I thought the Bobby Knuckles match went exactly the way we had called it to go. I mean, what a fight these two guys put on. Number one and number two ranked in the world, and they proved why they are there. Whittaker overall was just better, but both guys had their moments. Cannonier's leg kicks early on seemed to be causing problems, and then late in the final round, he seemed to rock Whittaker with just this, a little smidgen, but it was a right hand that stunned Rob for a second. Mm-hmm. But then besides this, it was all Whittaker's highlights. They were just amazing. He kept pumping out that jab, which seems to be landing every single time on Jared. And then his straight right was also getting the killer gorilla's attention. He did some amazing work, and it just he did a good job of the basic 1-2 striking. And it was something that Jared couldn't really answer to. It kept him busy, and it kept him scoring, and that's why Whittaker picked up the unanimous decision. Now, one of the bigger talking points as well was the knockdown for Whittaker.
I love that head kick. I love when he ducks down and the head kick comes over. It's just beautiful, isn't it?
Well, that's exactly what I was going to go on to talk about. His perfect textbook and iconic move. The 1-2 to a head kick combination. You can just see, I think it's only him and TJ Dillashaw that I see throw it and land it always. It's such a lovely combination. It's so, so fluid. It's not your basic 1-2 followed by a head kick. As I said, he puts the jab out there, the right follows, but then as he throws that right hand, he comes over and brings the right leg up for the head kick. And as I said, it flows so well. It's a beautiful three-piece combination, and it's caught guys in the past, and it's certainly caught Cannonier. I must admit, I was very impressed by the heart of Jared. I thought he recovered really well, because he was wobbly, he was falling back, and even when he fell quite hard onto his face. Yeah. But then, as I said, Whittaker couldn't finish him, and Cannonier managed to... When he got up and got him in the clinch, you thought, oh, shit, Cannonier looked strong here. Cannonier looked like he'd got his legs back to him, but then, as I said, the whole night belonged to Robert Whittaker, and deservedly so. I mean, a bigger talking point there is, what is next? I mean, there's nothing else to offer Whittaker, in my opinion, apart from a title shot at £185. He's beat the number two ranked guy in the world, he beat Till, and he never got his rematch after defending the belt successfully a couple of times. So overall, if Reaper doesn't get the shot, then the UFC is well and truly broken, in my opinion. As for Cannonier, I'd quite like to see him face Costa next. I think they both offer a good matchup of powerful strikers. And I think that Costa has the striking advantage, but overall Cannonier has a better well-rounded game, and that can cause Costa some issues. However, I also see the winner of Till versus Hermanson getting either of these guys, and the loser getting the other. Either way, I think most of the top six middleweights in the UFC have a few matchups to be made between each other, and all of them offer very exciting matches. What do you think?
Robert Whittaker, like we're saying, I don't know, like, he definitely deserves a title shot, but who is he going to fight? Because it's a weird one, because Izzy's moving up to fight for a title.
Yeah. Well, I'm now confused on what they're going to do, because I genuinely thought next February, hopefully with the coronavirus, hopefully it would have eased out by then. And I was genuinely thinking we would get UFC 258 or whatever in Australia. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking you'd have Ortega versus Volkanovski on that card. And then I thought it would be Adesanya versus Whittaker. However, as you said, now that it looks like Adesanya and Błachowicz are matched up for the light heavyweight belt, you think, okay, right, where does this leave Whittaker? The only thing is, they cannot leave Whittaker out of the picture here. As I said, he's doing everything he's paid to do. So, give him a shot. Or, if Adesanya does go get the light heavyweight title, if he beats Blachowicz, well, then I think he should vacate the 185 title, which should go to Whittaker versus maybe even Costa. Give Costa another shot. As I said, I just don't think Whittaker can be left out of this picture now. He's doing everything he needs to do. He's the former champion. He's brilliant. Now, you might hear in the background, I believe that's fireworks going off. Guys, it is bonfire night, so we have to enjoy that as we are. Well, now, moving on to the main event of the evening, you've got Khabib Nurmagomedov going 29-0, dispatching of Justin Gaethje over just two rounds. What did you think of this?
You would never think you would finish by a triangle.
Oh, no.
Khabib, yeah. But he was saying he didn't want to hurt Justin in front of his family.
Yeah, which was interesting, because you think, well, you go in there to submit someone, you go in there to beat him up. You don't want to hurt him in front of his family. But I think it's because, as I said, they know each other from...
So much respect.
They know each other from their manager, Ali Abdelaziz. So I think because they know each other, they've spoken in the past, and I think it was something like Gaethje had said that he will never tap out... With the armbar, he said that he wouldn't have...
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so as I said...
There's a weird one, because apparently I heard that Justin Gaethje helped Khabib with his wake-up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, he should have spiked it. He should have made it wrong then. But, I mean, I think Gaethje fought well. I was impressed to see that on the scorecards, Gaethje becomes the second man ever to win a round over the dominant Dagestani fighter. So I thought that was pretty good. However, Khabib is just too good. No one can beat him. His wrestling, this submission threat is just beyond this world. You can't beat a man that trains with bears. Not even bears can beat this man. He's honestly just such a pleasure to watch, and in my eyes, he is the current GOAT in MMA. I think that Jones, GSP, Anderson Silva, they're all up there. But the thing is, Khabib has never been beaten, or even close to being beaten. It's not like you've had a few fights with John Jones, like the Gustafsson fight, Thiago Santos, the one more recently, Dominic Reyes. I mean, they're ones where you go, ooh, this could be close. Khabib has never had a close decision. Mm-hmm. So I think he is genuinely incredible. And I mean, the biggest talking point of the night, the retirement. This shocked me, and in my opinion, shocked the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a nice sentiment. I genuinely didn't see it coming, but surely 30-0 against GSP has to be his last fight. Ooh, surely that's got to be made.
Do you reckon?
Well, so my theory is, he said there's no way he's doing this without his dad, and that he made a promise to his mother. But bearing in mind, there was this whole narrative behind his father's wishes. It was something that his father's wishes before he passed away was to make sure that he goes 30-0, to make sure that he makes his retirement fight against Khabib. That was always spoken about when the pandemic first started, when his father first became ill. So I do think that could be something that's used in the future. That is, as I said, that Khabib comes back, and that's what he'll say is that, yes, I said that I wasn't going to come back, but he'll say something like his mother told him to, because that's what his father would have wanted. And I'm not, as I said, it's not trying to make a mockery at all. I think Abdulmanap was incredible, and I think regardless of what happens, the Nurmagomedov family deserve all the respect they get.
Definitely.
However, I do think potentially, as I said, I think potentially he comes back for 30-0. But for the moment, he has got his wishes of being ranked the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world by the UFC.
Yeah.
As you said, deservedly so. Now, we are moving on to the purpose of the show, our recap of last weekend's event, and our preview of this weekend's up-and-coming card. To kick it off, last weekend's card had some seriously impressive KOs, and I think 6 of the fights were finished by TKO or KO. Now, that's a solid start to breaking this down, but overall, I think it was a good fight night, filled with decent performances. You can argue that there wasn't much going for the fights prior to the card, because I always say that. Sometimes I look at fight night and I go, what happens from here? However, on the night, these guys showed up and they performed well, and that's what I like to see. I like to see these guys actually going out there, and regardless of if you're not very well known yet or if this fight isn't going to do much, if you put on a good performance, then it will do a lot.
Exactly.
So, the one I want to talk about first, before the main event, we're just going to talk about the main event, the co-main event this week. However, first and foremost, Bryce Mitchell Is he the most likable guy in MMA?
Yeah, come on, Cameron Shorts. He actually got them. I'm buzzing.
Exactly,
mate.
I mean, Mr. Cameron Shorts came out in style, and I'm so glad to see that Reebok gave him his request because he deserves it. They looked good in the octagon, and also, this is something I want to see more of: fighters having their own personal flair. Now, his actual performance was very, very impressive.
Yeah.
He outstruck his opponent. And landed nearly, I think, double what Feely could. I think it was something like 100 strikes to 51 strikes or something of similar range.
Yeah.
He looked phenomenal. And a big thing I want to talk about is, especially in the first round, I'm calling it now, I think Mitchell's wrestling is showing signs of a Khabib-like nature.
Yeah.
He manages to push for that takedown and he gets his guy down through sheer will sometimes. However, it's what he does with the takedowns that actually impresses me. He's always active, so he's either always pummeling the guy or he goes for sneaky submissions.
His cardio is unbelievable, isn't it?
Exactly. Now, I made the Khabib comparison for two reasons. Go watch the highlights on BT Sport on their YouTube. Bryce manages to get Feely down in the first round, and then when he's on the ground, he wraps Feely's legs beneath him and then proceeds to cause some damage. The wrapping of the legs is very, very Khabib-esque. He straightens out his opponent's legs underneath him, then uses his left leg to cross under his right and lock them up. Now, as I said, you watch a lot of the way Khabib holds a guy down, and they have got their legs tied beneath them, led straight out. Then the second comparison was when Feely was able to stand up after the first takedown, Bryce immediately stood up holding Feely and proceeded to push him up against the cage. And he left no room for Feely to work, and once more, that's very Khabib-like. If you watch a lot of how Khabib pursues his takedowns, it's a persistent pursuit with no room to move. He keeps his head so tight to their body, and that's exactly what Bryce was doing, so that it didn't give them any chance to swing at them or to try and re-focus. He was always keeping them out of the guard, and as I said, overall, a cracking display by the number 15 ranked guy in the world. Well, let's move on. We have the main event of the evening, the return of the legend, Anderson the Spider Silva, against the revitalized Uriah Prime Time Hall. Now, when this matchup was made, I was a bit like, okay, why is this happening? I would have been excited to see this matchup 5 years ago, but now I'm not too sure. However, having said this, I think these guys put on a decent fight, and I think these guys caused each other issues. I actually think Silva won the first two rounds, and I think he was absolutely leading the dance, and I was quite surprised at how passive Hall was actually looking in the fight. He didn't really go for much.
Yeah.
However, I guess against a guy like Silva, you can't go in there expecting to finish him or rush in and get the KO over a 45-year-old veteran of the sport. As I said, I think a lot of people go in there thinking, yeah, they're going to get the knockout here, they're going to do this. But someone like Silva with his counter-striking, it's very, very hard to do that. So after Hall knocked Silva down late in the third round, I think we knew the fight was done there. I think it was pretty clean, the knockdown itself. And then, although Silva was able to survive until the bell, I think we then knew that that was the beginning of the end, and then shortly after, Hall was able to get the finish. Just a few things to note, though. I don't think this is Silva's last fight. He has another left on his contract, and I'd like to see him take that. I don't really get why Dana is saying it would be disgusting if another promotion let him fight, and that he won't let Silva fight anymore. Like, I don't think that was necessarily the case here. I agree that he's getting older, and he's nowhere near what he used to be. But with one fight left, give him another veteran and let them see their career out together. I think the fight was strange. I thought Silva did look a bit past it, but nowhere near his level of skill was so much better than some of the guys we've actually seen fight in the UFC before. Like, Silva still has a lot of skill left, and I think he should be allowed to show that in, say, like a testimonial fight to end his career. To end his career with a promotion that he helped build. Let's not forget how Silva went, 16-0 or something like that in the UFC at one stage. I just think that to call it disgusting for him to fight again, no. We've seen people fight in the UFC, like CM Punk. That was pretty disgusting because they weren't...
That's a disrespect to Silva.
Exactly, and I just think that yes, you might not be able to give him a fight against these top 15 guys, but give him a fight that he's either going to win or, in general, against another legend that wants to see out their career as well, make it a retirement fight for them both, give him a co-main event or even a main event on a fight night, and that would sign off his career nicely. But as for Hall, firstly, piss off, mate, that you think you deserve a title shot after beating an unranked guy. Never in the history of the sport has that led to a title shot, and I hope it never does. Like, I know Silva's a legend, but Hall, you have a long way to go before you get a title shot. And if you think you get it soon, then once more, this sport is broken. If he gets a title shot in the near future, wow. I mean, personally,
I think you should go for your Romero, mate.
That'd be a great fight. I think that fight was meant to be made a few years ago, wasn't it? Or like a year ago.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, I like that fight a lot. I think Hall is about 3 or 4 fights away from a title shot. And in that division, I don't see him necessarily going on a 4-fight winning streak, as these guys are top level. But he is currently on a 3-fight winning streak, and I can see maybe a 6-fight win streak boosting him to a final shot. But you are 17 and 9, I should say, in MMA. You can't beat an unranked guy and they say you deserve a shot because how long you've been in the sport. I mean, how many guys are in the UFC who have been in the sport for ages? They don't get a win and then go, well, because I've been in the sport this long, I think I deserve a shot. No, exactly. They just go, yeah, I need to do some work. I mean, he's been in it since 2013 and he's got some fantastic wins. However, he's also taken some very disappointing losses. Basically, you're the number 9 ranked guy. You deserve to be number 9, and with a few more fights, you could push for that number 1 contender spot. There's a lot of middleweights above you who deserve that spot a lot more. And as you said, give him someone like Yoel Romero next, and then someone like Till Hermansson, Costa, Cannonier, and then potentially you might be talking Whittaker and then a title shot. But for the time being, you ain't getting a title shot. And if you do, then, as I said, I just wouldn't be interested in the sport for a long time. It would be a shame, say Adesanya moves up to light heavyweight and vacates the belt. Imagine they give Whittaker Hall the shot. Because the thing is, Whittaker is the most deserving guy there, and he is a champion. Hall, people would look at it and go, why the hell is he sitting there?
Exactly.
So that's what I mean. I do actually like Uriah Hall quite a lot, but I just think, where do these guys get this thought sometimes where they go, yeah, I deserve a shot now? And you go, in what world do you deserve that shot? Exactly. In what world? Right, but that is our review of last weekend's event complete. We move on to a preview of this weekend's card, and once more, we're just going to focus on the main and the co-main events, as that brings us to the usual 6 bouts for the week broken down. First and foremost, Tanner Bosa gets his first UFC co-main event when he takes on the former UFC heavyweight champion Andrei Arlovsky. Now, this is a fight I'm really looking forward to. Mm-hmm. I'm going to lay it on the line here. I know I haven't done so well in the past with this, but I think Tanner Bosa wins this by sheer annihilation. In the way, I honestly love the way Tanner moves. I think
he just walks through people, doesn't he?
He does. And what one thing I really like about him is you kind of see a lot of these heavyweights, and they don't throw a lot of head kicks, they don't throw a lot of combinations. They kind of just stand and trade and then use a lot of their wrestling. Now, Tanner Bosa, for me, is one of them heavyweights who you think, He believes in himself, but I think he's young enough, fit enough, and yes, he's a bigger lad, but to kind of be able to mix up his game a bit, you don't see many heavyweights throwing spinning kicks, you don't see many heavyweights, as I said, even throwing head kicks as such. So I would quite like to see someone like Bosa keep doing that, because he's so quick on his feet, and he's so active with the striking. So I think a lot of heavyweights go for haymakers, essentially. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think Bosa necessarily goes for that, he just kind of keeps lighting his feet, picks people apart, and then, as I said, when he lands that heavy shot, they go night-night. but as I said, he's typically more active than the usual UFC heavyweight, and Arlovsky is a vet, a legend, and he's still going strong, but I think Bosa's looked very dangerous in every one of his fights, and I think Arlovsky has struggled to keep up with his fights recently. Don't get me wrong, he's still picking up good wins, but Bosa is, in his 4 UFC fights, he's been very, very solid. I think he's 3-1, and he's KO'd 2 of them guys in impressive fashion. Mm-hmm. I mean, Arlovsky was able to pick up a decision win over Felipe Lins. Bosa knocked him out in 2 minutes. Do you know what I mean? You look at that and you go, well, yes, Arlovsky, fair play for picking up that win, but look at the type of fighter Felipe Lins is, a bigger lad who's quite good at submissions. Well, as I said, Bosa knocks him out in 2 minutes. You're going to be more impressed by Bosa because, as I said, he got the knockout, but he was actually able to put him out there. Arlovsky was just able to kind of pick up the win. And as I said, a win's a win, but I think if you compare the two performances, you've got to look at Bosa and go, yeah, he's looking the favourite here.
Yeah.
Arlovski's been going well against the heavyweights who are typically good Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu specialists or wrestlers. But against these guys with KO power, like Ngannou, Rozenstruik, Taito Ivasa, he's getting knocked down and usually knocked out. And I think Bosa has that striking speed and power to get Arlovski out of there. And I think that's exactly where he goes on Saturday night. My only expectation, exception, is that Arlovski is able to throw Bosa off his game, utilise his vast experience, and take Bosa into deep waters. So just Bosa, I think his loss in the UFC was by decision. So potentially Arlovski can keep his distance, can not allow himself to get hit as much, and then just try and point score against Bosa, and then also grapple with him when he needs to. But my money bet would be on Bosa to get a KO at any time in the fight. What about yourself?
I'm going to agree with you. I'm gonna keep it to you. I'm going to agree with you. Dylan Bosa's going to, yeah. I see it start of the second round.
I would be surprised if Bosa went in there and knocked him out in about 30 seconds, because you see guys like Ngannou and Rozenstruik do that, because that's how powerful they actually are. With Bosa, I think we might see a round or two, and then at just some stage, I say at any point, because I don't think it would be like clearly knackered out and then he does it or anything. I think you just might see him land maybe a 3-4-5-piece combination that just shocks Arlovski, and as I said, one of them shots knocks him down and potentially out.
Yeah.
We'll just see. But let's move on to our main event of the evening. What a fight we have in store here. Glover Teixeira versus Thiago Santos for likely the number one UFC light heavyweight contender spot. I love this fight, and I'm so glad we finally get to see these guys go toe-to-toe. Yeah. It's third time lucky, and I think that we will see this determine the next guy for the belt. I know that there's talk about Adesanya getting a shot against Blachowicz, which, as I said, I don't particularly agree with, but I can see it making money, and I can see it being a fight that is made. But these two guys are the most deserving to get the spot after that. These two guys, as I said, I think the winner of this, their next fight will be a title shot. Whereas they have to wait maybe 6 months for that, but overall, as I said, I think they're going to get the shot. Firstly, Thiago Moreira Santos, a scary beast of a man with KO power and supreme agility. For a man his size, he moves quick, he's very, very agile, and I like the way he fights. He's a guy who can shut your lights out at pretty much any point, but also he has the speed to clip you at any point as well. He put in a fantastic display against Jones, and many people argue that without the busted ACL, Santos would have had that in the bag. I think Santos has proven over time that he's one of them guys who may get a few setbacks, and he has. Was it David Branch, I think his name is? Knocked him out, and you think, oh, you should never have lost that fight. And he's done that a couple of times. However, 90% of the time, he's bouncing back, and he's able to string a variety of wins together to chuck himself into title contention. But talking about someone who has strung some wins together and all round is looking the number one guy, Glover Teixeira. He is a legend of the sport, and I was going through his career earlier and it shocked me how good he actually is. So now in the UFC, he's genuinely fought some of the biggest names, and when he's lost, it's been against the very best. I mean, I think his first UFC loss was against John Jones, the considered greatest of all time. And then he lost to Philip Davis, Anthony Rumble Johnson, Gustafsson, and Corey Anderson. But if you name some of them, Phil Davis, title contention for Bellator, Rumble Johnson, I mean, one of the biggest.
Yeah.
Gustafsson, former title challenger. Corey Anderson, going to be a title challenger of Bellator, and arguably should have been one in the UFC. They're his only losses out of 19 UFC fights. Now, when you add that into people that he's actually beaten, you begin to realise just how experienced and dangerous Teixeira is. Right, he's beaten Ryan Bader, Rampage Jackson, Ovin St. Preux, Rashad Evans, Jared Cannonier. These are all former title challengers, and to top that off, he's on a 4-fight winning streak with wins over Carl Robertson, Ion Kutalaba, Nikita Krylov, and Anthony Smith, who also fought for the title. Do you know what I mean? Like Ryan Bader, Rampage Jackson, Rashad Evans. He's beaten all of these guys, and he's still continuing to win, and he's on a 4-fight winning streak against people who have fought for the title. That is a serious position to be calling the shots in, and I think a win over Saturday night will get him the title shot. What do you think?
41 years he is. He's good, like, for 41.
I totally agree. And I was about to say that. I do think he's close to retirement because of his age. But I certainly don't think he's down now. And I think whatever route we see him go down, a win or a loss, I think I think in the near future he does retire, and I think he'll retire as one of the UFC's most underrated and potentially most underrated fighters, and potentially could retire as a champion. He's so good, and I think he deserves to be exactly where he is, and where he's going to be Saturday night. But I don't know how I see this fight going. I think it's a very, very close fight, and either of these guys could get the win. We've seen Glover lose by KO or TKO twice, I think. It was Gustafsson and Rumble Johnson. So I do think Santos could KO this guy, and I do think he could go on to fight Yan, who, as I said, Santos has beaten Yan before. Mm-hmm. However, I also think Glover could KO Santos or drag him down for 5 rounds and just obliterate him. Mm-hmm. Literally hurt him on the ground, submit him, and in general demolish a guy like Santos. How do you see the fight playing out?
Like you were saying on the ground and that, he was doing like his fight with Anthony Smith. That was basically it, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. It was a good fight. I see Thiago beating him. Don't know how.
I haven't got
a prediction. Why haven't I got a prediction?
I don't know. Well, I think either way, a win for both of these guys is a serious claim on their records. And I think the way I would like to see the fight go down is an absolute barn burner between both guys. I'd like to see Santos fight like he did against Jones, fight smart, put on a great display, and then win via either like split decision or unanimous decision. Then he can go on for the title, and potentially Glover calls it a day by putting in a fantastic display. Like, I wouldn't like to see Glover, say, retire on being knocked out. I'd like to see him retire when he needs to, when a lot of fighters don't know when to call it a day. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see him retire before that happens, but equally, flip on his head. I would also love to see Glover beat Thiago, finish him, and then go for a title shot, because he's a serious legend of the sport. He deserves this run for the title, and that would be 5 wins in a row against top guys, and I think he's got a good chance of beating Yan too. I think he could take Yan into deep water as well. I think they fight quite similar. But even if you say Yan KO'd him, then he can retire going for a title shot. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? He deserves absolutely everything he's got in this sport. And he should be held as a legend and a pioneer of the UFC. And I think Santos would come back from a loss here. But as I said, if Glover doesn't, I don't know how far away he is from the title shot. Whereas I think if he wins this, he gets the title shot. Mm-hmm. As I said, I don't know which way. All I would like to see over the next couple of years is Glover get some decent runs, but then potentially call it a day before it's too late. And that's not to disrespect him. That's because I genuinely think if he starts being one of them guys who gets given hard fights and people start knocking him out all the time, then I think people won't respect him for actually how good he is. Whereas, as I said, if he gets the win, I think he'll be brilliant. Either way, I think it's going to be a fantastic fight, and I can't wait to see who bests the other. Now, before we move on to our fight announcements, I just want to talk about one more, another under-respected, undervalued guy in our sport. The new Bellator middleweight champion of the world, Gegard Mousasi. Oh, I'm pretty much going to say the exact same what I said about Teixeira here, but Mousasi is one of my favourites of all time. The guy is still dominating every single fight that he's in. He defeated Douglas Lima, Bellator's welterweight champion, last Thursday night, and in general, he is one of the most well-rounded fighters I have ever seen. His record is bloody 47-7-2 in MMA. That is obscene. Now, once more, just a note on who he's actually lost to. Fedor Emelianenko, Muhammad Lul, Lyoto Machida, Ronaldo Jacare Souza, Uriah Hall, and Rafael Lovato Jr. They are all former champions in the sport, with the exception of Hall and Souza, I think. But he's avenged two of those defeats against Hall and Machida. That is incredible. That's a Fedor in there. Jacare Souza, Lovato Jr., Machida. These guys are the only people he's actually lost to. But then to note, people think of this middleweight dominant fighter nowadays. But back in the Strikeforce, Pride, Dream, and K1 days, he beat guys like Mark Hunt, the former UFC heavyweight, Hector Lombard, Melvin Manhoef. Like, he's beaten some big old boys. And without a doubt to me, he is one of the all-time greats. Just for you to appreciate who he's actually beaten as well, here are some of the biggest names. Hector Lombard, Melvin Manhoef, Jacare Souza, Mark Hunt, Ovin St. Preux, Alir Latifi, Dan Henderson, Thiago Santos, the one who's fighting this weekend, Vitor Belfort, Uriah Hall, Chris Weidman, Rory McDonald, Lyoto Machida, and now Douglas Lima.
Do you know what he reminds me of? It reminds me of, now when you go on UFC and you create a character, and you put them stamina to like 100, and anything 100, he reminds us.
It actually is, yeah. He is like a career character you create. Say you're playing it on like hard difficulty. He is like that. Like you take a few losses, but other than that, you start beating all these guys who is just... It seems ridiculous to be a middleweight, but you fought Mark Hunt in the past. It's like, what the hell? But as you said, he is like one of the guys. He's like a video game character, and he's so good. And just all them names that I've just listed off there, you think, bloody hell. Like, how is he not considered one of the all-time greatest? And let's also not forget... The UFC didn't cut him. He left because of the contract. He wasn't being paid enough there. He left the UFC on a 5-fight winning streak, beating former champs like Weidman and Belfort. I think his last fight, he knocked out Chris Weidman. I mean, he is one of my GOATs. I can't wait to see what he does in Bellator as the middleweight champion. And as I said, just shine a bit of praise on that guy because... I know people laugh at Bellator, but Bellator's still very legit, and overall, as I said, a guy like that, that is incredible. That is the type of person you want to look up all of their fights. You'll actually see a true mixed martial artist and someone who, as I said, has fought the best of the best and beaten them. Now, just a few fight announcements to make. We have Dom Reyes versus Yuri Prochaska has been targeted for a February bout, which is a really good fight. I like that. I think that's a good fight for Reyes to come back off after his loss to Blachowicz. And I also think it's a good fight for Prochaska. He beat the number 6, I think, ranked guy in the world in his first UFC fight. He knocked out Volkan Oezdemir. So why not? What a great fight. I said that's probably 3rd versus 6th ranked. Both of them make sense, and as I said, I think both of them will be wanting to get the win over each other and then potentially looking for another title shot in the future. You've also got Cynthia Calvillo versus Caitlin Shukagian. I like this fight a lot because I think there was a lot of question with Shukagian, Calvillo, and Draj and Lauren Murphy. People look at that going, who is next for Shevchenko? For me, because Calvillo's beaten Shukagian, I think that confirms that Andraj Shevchenko is going to happen in the future. I think the fact they've given Calvillo Shukagian and not a title shot, that's like ranked 2nd and 3rd against each other. That just means that Andrade is ranked number 1. She's a former champion in the strawweight division and now has moved up a weight class, and Shevchenko hasn't got anyone to fight. Shevchenko Andrade screams a great fight, and as I said, I think that's going to happen. You've also got Amanda Ribas versus Michelle Waterson chucked in there as well. That's another fight that's going to happen hopefully in the next 3 weeks or couple of months, I think. I mean, I love that fight. I think Ribas is a really good up-and-coming fighter of the sport. I think she's 10-1. She seems to be one they're targeting as a future champ. But also, Michelle Waterson, as I said, a legend, a veteran of the sport. Someone who's fought for belts and in general attracts a lot of fans in. Once more, what a great fight. And then the final one, I think this came today, I could be wrong. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson versus Jeff Neal in the welterweight division. I love that fight as well. I think Jeff Neal's been on a tear recently. I think he's maybe 14-1, beating guys like... He knocked out Mike Perry. That is a solid statement, yeah. And then other than that, like Jeff Neal's just beating most people he fights. And he's Jeff, the hands of steel Neal, he lives up to that. He's doing well. But then you've got someone like Wonderboy. Jeff's this guy who's known... for kind of, as I said, his knockout power, his striking ability. Well, Wonderboy is the best guy you want to strike with. He's so good. His karate style, everything about Wonderboy. If you want to beat someone in a striking matchup, if you want to test yourself against the best strikers, I think Wonderboy's that guy. So I think that's a fantastic fight they're making as well. And I think that also hopefully propels both guys for, as I said, like a UFC shot in the future.
Yeah.
A title shot, in the future. It won't be that fight that gets them there, but I think whoever wins out of this will potentially get a top 5 guy, and then potentially down the line look for that title shot.
There is one announcement you probably already heard about it. Leon Edwards versus I can't pronounce his name, Kazma
Chimaev.
That's the one.
Yes. So yeah, I can't believe we haven't spoken about that. That's because that was a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, mate, that is a crazy, crazy fight. Personally, I really am looking forward to it. However, I hate that they've done this. That the UFC
doesn't make
done
sense,
this.
Does it?
No.
Yeah.
Because you think Leon was ranked 3rd in the world. Yes, Lee. I I really like the Edwards brothers, but I do think that Leon should have taken a fight before this. I do think Leon's potentially been quite awkward, and he was meant to fight Woodley in London, and that wasn't his fault. The pandemic came along. Then after that, I do think he had an opportunity to fight on Fight Island, and he didn't take it. So I do think that potentially Edwards has kind of thrown his toys out the pram a little bit, and then, as I said, got taken out the rankings, and then suddenly accepts this fight. But equally, there's no way to me that Chimaev should be getting this shot.
I don't get it, mate. So what happens? Chimaev becomes number three now if he wins.
Exactly. Exactly that. Literally, as I said, he's fought Rhys McKee, John Phillips, and then, I forgot his name, is Gerald Merchart, is how you pronounce it. Yeah. As I said, three decent wins and all dominant, but you can't then get the rank number three guy. I think he should get maybe rank 8, rank 9, or a big name, but I think Leon Edwards is too big. I think Chimaev's got a very good fight in his hands there as well. He's such a big lad, and he's such a good wrestler. But yeah, I do feel a little bit that they've done Edwards dirty there. I think Edwards is one of them guys who was on like an 8-fight win streak, and people say, why has he not got the shot yet? Well, what a way to rip it out of his hands. Like,
exactly.
I am disappointed in that, but I'm looking forward to the fight. And as I said, I'm not going to count Edwards out. Edwards is a bloody good fighter, and I think he's going to put on a good performance as well. I think it's without a doubt Chimaev's hardest test.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, that is all we have time for this week. Thank you guys so much for tuning into the Ultimate MMA podcast. Make sure to share, like, and subscribe to us. And be sure to tune in next week, where we'll recap the results of this weekend's card and preview the next card, which takes place on Saturday the 14th of November, as the 18-1 Islam Makhachev, there we are, takes on the former champion Rafael Dos Anjos. I've been your host, Jake Jones, and I want to say a massive thank you to my guy, my co-host, Sean Gilly, for returning to the show and making it fantastic, being your usual fantastic self, mate. It's been a pleasure to have you. Be sure to let us know any feedback you have for the podcast, and let us know which guests you'd like me, Sean, and Liam to speak to over the next few weeks. We will be speaking to fighters over the next few weeks whilst we've got this lockdown on. Might as well get some things going. And as I said, that's something you can all look forward to. Thank you very much, and take care.